All right, good afternoon, everyone. We've got a guest with us this afternoon for the podcast. And Andy, tell us where you pastor your church and how to find you on Sermon Audio.
My name is Andy Webb. I pastor Providence PCA Church, and you can find me on Sermon Audio as Providence PCA. So happy to be there.
Right here in Fayetteville.
Happy to be here.
And The article that we are going to discuss today was shared by you on your Facebook page. Obviously, you think that the guy, the author, is onto something here with regard to identifying a problem within the church or within our nation. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think she. It's obviously a satire, and to a certain extent, but I think she's got it exactly right.
Inside America's largest religious revival, you know nothing about. Well, when we hear the word revival, we want to know what church is having a revival. Where's God doing a work? So it's a great title. And so let's get started, Brian.
For decades, demographic studies have indicated the steady decline of religion in America. But new measures suggest that, on the contrary, at least one religion in America is alive and well, thriving in every community and claiming devoted adherence in nearly every household. This new religious revival has remained under the radar in large part because its adherents did not claim any religious attachment to its social institution. But by every measure of behaviors typically associated with religion, it is deceitful to label it as anything less. Although it shies away from adopting an overarching organization or name for itself, for the purposes of this study, it will be considered under the name Athletica. What first must impress outsiders studying the life of Athletica is how wholehearted its devotion is the devotion of its followers. These disciples are willing to sacrifice almost limitlessly where their dedication to this faith is concerned. Money, time, health, and even family may all be expended for the sake of bettering oneself with Athletica. And it is no exaggeration to say its members orient their lives around the strictures of their religion's demands. Whereas in traditional...
Hold on, let's get that middle line, because okay. That's a good one. Okay. Forget one service a week. We have daily meetings. And we all know what the author is speaking to. And by the way, her name is Heather Smith, and the date of the article is November 10th, the year 2017. Every church, yours, mine, all churches, we're struggling with that second service. We're struggling with that midweek service, aren't we?
Yeah, absolutely.
We're struggling with that consistent attendance to where the Sunday morning worship service is plus or minus 10 or 15, because you can count on the fact that there'll be... We'll change 50 bodies in a number between one Sunday and another, just based on the weather, how things are going in their lives, any number of things. Are your numbers any different, or are you also struggling with getting to come back for an evening service on Sunday night or a midweek service?
Oh no, we definitely struggle. I mean, it's if we get half the church back on a Sunday evening, I call it a major success. So. The people who come back tend to be, and I'm sure this is the case with you guys, the most committed believers within the church, the people who are making sacrifices in order to come back. But we also have that with Bible studies. I don't know if you guys are getting that, Bible studies, prayer meetings, Sunday school. Generally, we seem to have switched over to an idea that Sunday morning worship is all that should be required and all that's sufficient. And I think with most American Christians, the rest of Sunday is their free day or another work day for them. So,
whereas in traditional American Christianity, followers would regularly meet once or twice a week, a timetable most now find unduly, how do I pronounce that word?
Onerous.
Yeah, yeah. And we're there. These members of this new religion gather 4, 5, 6, or even 7 days a week.
Despite the significant time demands. I mean, just thinking there for just a moment on what are the... It used to be said 3 to thrive. Sunday morning, Sunday night, midweek, whether it be Wednesday, Tuesday, Thursday. An hour, hour and a half. And this new religion, it's like... A two hour daily. I mean, that's only if you're remotely committed, and if you want to do any, go advance with whatever it is you're committed to.
Yeah, in this new religion, you've got to travel.
Yeah.
you'll spend hours on the road to get to the appropriate place of worship so that you can then spend hours worshiping. Yep. It is unbelievable. And they won't bat an eye to spend the gas, the food, the lodging to get to these new places of worship.
Paragraph before says these disciples are willing to sacrifice limitlessly. Money, time, health, even family.
Okay. And here comes the crux of it. Before we even get into the meat of the entire thing, let's just be absolutely fairly honest and quit touting that Three to Thrive was some kind of great spiritual achievement. When they met in the book of Acts daily, breaking bread, praying, and fellowshipping in the discipleship of the apostles and their teachings. They would sit up to midnight to the point that a guy falls asleep, falls out of a window, dies, and is resurrected. We want to tout that 100 years ago when we came up with this idea that we'll have a midweek service and twice on Sundays, we were doing God some kind of great thing. The fact of the matter is, if we were actually as devoted here, I mean really devoted, not hypocritically devoted, completely and utterly devoted the way they're devoted here, we would be meeting daily also still today. And we wonder why the church is in such disarray.
Those are bold words, Jack.
Well, I've been saying them for 15 years. And I still believe
we better read on before someone's toes are stepped on.
The families of these adherents dutifully and unflinchingly keep these meetings' commandments and accept as normal the stringent penalties imparted to those who miss a gathering.
Yeah, and you know what's even funny is, so I teach band, and if I give a student one iota of a markdown for missing a concert, mm-hmm. And oh, by the way, we have three concerts a year if we're lucky, because all the sports things that are going on, we have to only have three concerts.
Those are religious things, Jonathan.
So if I, you didn't come to a concert, so I'm going to drop your grade, the parent has to set up a meeting the next day to come in and call me on the car. Why would you do this? Oh, and why didn't you show up to the concert? Well, we had a sporting thing, and
right.
Well, was it a game? Mm-hmm. No, it was a practice. Mm-hmm. You're kidding me, right?
Well, things aren't.
You
want to
say? You want to say? There's the door. Yeah. What you have to say is.
That's all right. What are the penalties, Brian?
All right. penalties usually enacted by limiting the devotee's rights to participation in an important group ceremony. Nor are the youngest members of Athletica uninitiated in their family's devotion. Athletica parents regularly begin teaching their children its basic skills as soon as they are able to toddle, and some begin their benevolent indoctrination well before that by dressing their infants in tiny versions of the liturgical vestments.
Oh, man.
That's the best
excellent.
Sentence.
That's just a great sentence.
Oh, she was laughing when she wrote this. By age 4 or 5, their parents have already catechized most of these youngsters in the basic tenets of Athletica, though this pious education will continue to deepen through daily family conversations, oral and written retellings of important historical moments in Athletica, and inclusion in the essential Athletica ceremonies. Eager young zealots of elementary age and upward often relish memorizing not only the many Athletica rules, but also masses of historical information about specific persons and events. Although it is hard to believe such memorization would be undertaken voluntarily, there is no trace of a drill-and-kill mentality about this phenomenon. These youngsters apparently love this imparted faith enough that they simply cannot help trying to absorb everything about it that they can, and they especially find pleasure in learning of the great heroes of Athletica's past, whom they inevitably long to emulate.
Super well written, isn't it?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Jack. You fired us up a few minutes ago. Keep it up.
This, okay, number one, whenever you analyze somebody, you should go to who the person is. This woman is a person who advocates classic Lutheran education and holds a BA in elementary education and MA in English. You're going to tell me that she's not doing the same thing with English, that she's not promoting the literary authors who, like Shakespeare, teach kids that it's okay to deceive your mom and dad, get married in secret, and commit suicide. And it's touted as the greatest love story of all time, a.k.a. Romeo and Juliet. Mm-hmm. I mean, come on. I mean, I get what she's saying, and she's dead on about how we've misplaced our priorities, and we're worshiping a system of athletics, but she's demonizing the entire thing behind athletics, and she's not even giving any credibility to the fact of the positive benefits that it can bring. Now, I mean, at this
point... You're suggesting that she's not being fair?
I am. I am suggesting that she is not being fair because this could be found in any one of the different things that you can do, and there's plenty of people who would do this in the fine arts, though not the kids that came in and had a conference because they got marked off for, and people who in academia embrace academics to such a degree that they can't function outside of a school's organizational field and sphere of influence. I mean, what we're talking about here is, okay, putting everything the way God taught us to put everything into a moderation and into its proper prioritized place.
So what we're talking about is idolatry.
What we're talking about is idolatry. And this could be extrapolated into any one of the idolatrous fields. This could as easily be PT, so for your soldier who's out ruck marking, doing his ruck march on Sunday mornings instead of in church.
Sure.
Yeah, and I understand that, and I hear what you're saying. However, I would argue that if you look just as a whole and make a broad spectrum analysis of America in general, we're not having an issue with idolatry towards academics. In fact, we rank very low in the world.
But Jonathan,
individual people, yes.
But Jonathan, you have to look at why she attacked. I just want to put it out there so we understand. I believe what she wrote is right.
Oh yeah.
I believe what she wrote is right about America's displaced or too much emphasis on sports. I don't think that sports beyond high school probably promote any positive benefit for our society anymore. I think the professional role model is completely and utterly gone as a positive influence in life. I think that capitalism and greed has completely robbed us of everything that goes on with this. But this woman is a classic education. Classic schools are all about the fine arts and nothing about sports.
You should know something about that.
Sports don't have a place in it.
Yes.
Yeah, sports don't have a place in it. And I think that's why she's jumping on this one so hard.
Right, but you realize, Jack, that she's not talking about the sports program at your high school, local high school.
No, Pastor, I don't believe that.
I think she's pushing the envelope all the way to the travel teams, the entire...
Well, I do, but what I'm saying, though, is I think that she would be against the sports in school because she's an advocate for classical education, which means that she's an opponent of traditional education that involves athletics.
Well, if I can, I was gonna wait a little while to. As we move further through the article,
jump
to
let we never speak.
But a few things just occurred to me. First off, it used to be obviously, and we know this in Western civilization, that theology was at the center of education. It was the queen of the sciences that held everything together. We removed theology, obviously, from any place in American education, certainly American public education. What have we put in the place of theology? I would argue it's sports. That's the. If you look at where the majority, for instance, of spending in public school programs and even in private universities in the United States, in the South particularly, it's their sports programs. They'll ditch a music program. They'll ditch an arts program long before they will ever ditch a basketball program or a football program, particularly football.
And I agree because that's because the capitalistic nature.
And I would want to tweak this a little. I'd say consumeristic, not you know, capitalism is, because I think capitalism is biblical.
Right.
I don't think consumerism is biblical. I think consumerism is idolatry.
Well, they're just going where the money is, right?
Yeah. I mean, they're right. More than just that, though, sports has been used historically as a means of undermining religion, and we need to see what the broader agenda is. I mean, for instance, Antiochus Epiphanes, Israel, what the in the ancient testamental period, the Jews' greatest enemy, was attempting to destroy religion. What did he use to destroy religion? Well, he did use, to a certain extent, Greek culture, poetry, and things like that, but his most effective tool was the gymnasium, the sports, the athletics. I mean, all of these, and you know how they competed back then. They all stripped down nude, so he was going after their ethics as well, and he wanted the Sabbath to be a time when they were out throwing the discus and the javelin and wrestling instead of worshiping. In 1633, Charles I, who was having difficulty with the Puritans and the religious revival that was occurring within the British Church, which was, you know, it was not something he wanted to see. He wanted a very lax, antinomian kind of religion, and he wanted to get back at the Puritans. And incidentally, the Puritans are not just the forebears of the Presbyterians, but also the Baptists. They had a very high view of the Sabbath, and so he said, if I can undermine the Sabbath, I can undermine all of this revival. Sunday, the Sunday Sabbath, that is. So what did he do? He published this book of sports and ordered ministers in England to read to their congregations that it was acceptable to dance and to play sports, in particular, on the Lord's Day. And he said, if you want to keep your position as a minister in the Church of England, you have to read this in your church. And I love what one Puritan minister did. He said to his congregation, the king has said, I have to read this, but he has not said that you have to hear it. So he dismissed the church and read it to the end. But, I mean, that was... So all that to say, this isn't something new to our century. This is something that keeps coming up again. And sports is just a very effective tool.
But I'll give you that, Andy.
Okay.
And I know Rome did the same thing.
Right.
Especially around the time of Marcus Aurelius and those guys, when Rome was really starting to crack and crumble.
Mm-hmm.
And they used the circus as the means to distract the crowd, to feed them bread, because they themselves wouldn't even take their own currency because they knew their government was bankrupt.
Mm-hmm.
And they used them as a distraction. I would say we're definitely using sports at our national level as a distraction from actually discussing the real things that are going on.
Oh, you mean like when Trump is tweeting about taking a knee,
yes,
at the national anthem,
yes,
and we have a $21 trillion debt that,
yeah,
no one's even discussing?
Yes, I would say that, Pastor, but I'm going to say this. But we know that Paul also, under the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, looked to athletics and drew from it the principles of discipline on how we're supposed to live our Christian life. So again, I bring it back down to the high school level. The point in which it's not the elite athlete anymore. It's the mass of the students that can be done. And the problem is you're right, we've taken the theology out of it. But athletics in and of itself does not have to be
sinful.
Mm-hmm. It can be a form of discipline for a kid who's not inclined and not talentedly gifted for playing a musical instrument, Jonathan.
Well, they could do both.
But a person who can actually just go run.
All right, but let me ask you a question, then.
But I think it comes back to your point of the moderation.
It does.
You know, because at the point in which, like Pastor said, when you know you're traveling on Sunday and your focus is on, I'm going to take my kid to all these games and practices.
And believe me, I have not said I deny any of that.
Right.
Paul does say bodily exercise profiteth a little. But he then follows it with godliness is profitable.
Yeah, and he says when we run the race for a temporary crown, if we run the race for the eternal crown, we have to run it with the same type of discipline, the same type of orderly conduct,
right,
and we have to follow the rules and be lawful. And he says, and we have to exercise ourselves like a person beating the air, you know, doing the calisthenics and everything,
mm-hmm,
else, to the same degree. We bring our body under the same subjection that an athlete does. So he drew a lot of parallels from it and extrapolated them into the spiritual realm.
And yeah, and he was obviously speaking to a Gentile culture. The Hellenistic culture was even more sports mad than we are today. I mean, it was they didn't have,
well,
they,
had,
yeah,
blood,
they didn't,
oh, yeah,
they
were
throwing people to the lions.
They,
yeah,
didn't,
well,
have they also,
well, we're not
they didn't
far
have
from it with our MMA.
So you know, what did they do? They used to
definitely
watch,
getting closer.
Yeah, we are moving towards the blood sports and so on. But my question is this. I mean, one of the things that we haven't asked is why.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it that it's so easy to get people to punish their bodies?
And I'm not
destroy
sure this
their
article
schedules.
Ever answers that question.
It doesn't. It doesn't hit that. And
but
why is it so difficult for us to get people to actually show up for a church meeting, and so easy for them to get to travel 100 miles
but I
to
think
go
it
to play
does.
An away game?
But I think she answered it. I think we've already read the answer that she gave us right out the gate.
Mm-hmm.
The toddler is put
in the vestitures.
The liturgical vestitures.
I mean, so here's the thing. I remember I was 3 years old when I was taught to throw a baseball. I was 3 years old when I was taught to swing a bat. In fact, I was born left-handed, and I was taught to be right-handed, not because left-handed deaths were hardly around in the 1970s, early 70s, and you would start going to school, and you'd have a lot of difficulties because they didn't make the desk go the opposite direction to support the left-handed writer and stuff. That wasn't why I was switched. Statistically speaking, a right-handed batter produces more base hits than a left-handed batter and has a higher batting average, and I was switched from being left-handed to right-handed for the purpose of playing baseball. By my father.
Old Testament times, you've been handed a sling and sent on your way.
Or an archer. But my father made that decision. And I think that's the key, is that we see that there's some kind of bravado. There's some kind of manliness. There's some kind of machismo that's related to sports. This idea of victory. This idea of battle, this idea of conquering something. And what we haven't done is we haven't promoted that same type of battle mentality, that same type of warrior ethos, that when we take on the sin, by the Holy Spirit's empowering, of course, because there is no victory without God, and we can't overcome sin. But we don't. What we make an excuse for it because we have a weak mentality for it that we don't have for sports because of this bravado to it. The church has become too feminized with its pastel walls and everything else.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's our theology as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would agree that we are too feminized, and that's an outgrowth of years of. Am I allowed to use this word here? Arminian?
Yes, you're definitely allowed to use that.
Okay, the softer, gentler God who's waiting on you softly, and gently. Yeah. Jesus is calling, he's outside the door, he can't barge his way in. Effectual calling is just not part of the dialogue. But aside from the feminized part of the church, I think you got something more fundamental. I mean, we pass on what we love, what's important to us.
Well, that's our next paragraph. Yeah, right. We're going to let Brian read it. Yeah, start them young for optimal results. That's the title. Start them young for optimal results.
One reason for the brilliant success of Athletica in handing down its tenets from generation to generation is the belief that children should be initiated into the fullness of its ways as soon as possible. Unlike most Christian denominations, which have opted for segregating children's participation into minimal, appealing, but generally insubstantial segments of the community's life together, Athletica differentiates for its young catechumens only insofar as is necessary.
So, Pastor, what they're saying is family-integrated church.
Mm-hmm. Sure. That's one way you could argue it, but what about the very idea of insubstantial? I think the idea is, in 4 years old, you can play baseball. We call it T-ball, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And we make modifications so that you can hit the ball.
Yep.
We decide that at 4 years old, you can't learn God's Word, so we just provide babysitting.
Well, that's what I mean. We've removed family-integrated church. And we don't. This is one of the reasons why BBA is doing the entire Academy Worship thing.
Mm-hmm.
People are like, "Are you kidding me? You're going to put the K-5 with the 12th graders in the same auditorium and have the same message?"
Mm-hmm.
Yes, because those K-5s need to see seniors, and those seniors need to know that K-5s are looking at them.
One of the, and I think you're actually on to something. Although family integrated these days comes with a lot of baggage, so I try to stray away from that term. But one of the things that we see in the scriptures, and particularly in the pastoral epistles, is the absolute necessity of what I call cross pollination within the church: the older,
yep,
and the younger, mm-hmm, discipling.
Yes,
we talk about Titus 2 women, but we ignore the idea that Titus 2 is, there's Titus 2 men. The idea that the older men disciple the younger men,
right?
And we find that in sports.
Teach others.
You don't have your peers teaching you how to bat. You don't have your peer. You have coaches, and you have and who do you watch? You watch the guys who know how to do it. In Christianity, for some reason, we feel that it's a good idea to put everybody in the room who's in exactly the same place. I mean, I've been at churches, mega churches, where they demographically separate, not only according to age, but, for instance, they have the double income, no kids yet group. Then we have the singles in their 20s group. And then, so you're absolutely alike the other people you're meeting with. And as a result, there's no wisdom. There's no there's no discipline as well. So,
and that's one of the things that we're happy about, Andy. We're really, we've gotten rid of all single adult Sunday school classes.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah. If you have to integrate into a class where there's going to be married people, we don't have any of those classes because we want you interacting with married people. How are you supposed to grow when you're understanding what marriage is all about if you're in a room full of single people who aren't being influenced by married people?
It's like the people without kids telling you how to parent.
Yeah, it's very similar.
Like Bill Guther?
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. So, I went through his course. Then I found out, wait a minute, what? I got two kids and you got none?
Thanks.
Shut up.
Thanks, Jonathan. I'm glad I'm not the only one firing shots today.
Yeah. are we on It Will?
Around.
Sorry out there.
It will provide, for instance, child-sized items when physical stature would otherwise prevent participation. But in most ways, it teaches children through full involvement. The astonishing result of interacting with its children through the sometimes daunting vocabulary and directives of the adult adherents is that these youngest disciples prove all the more eager to learn the tenets of Athletica and to mature into full membership.
And can I hate to have to break in at this point.
Do it.
We have no sense of moving people up in the way that, I mean, the whole movement of milk to meat that we see within the Bible in terms of discipleship has fallen apart. And if you want to ask why is it that's, I hate to put it this way, so much of our worship is so childish, it's because of children's church. We train people for childish world worship, and that's what they want. And
so, are you listening?
And the people... You know, sports has never done it that way. I mean, they don't want, you know, major league t-ball players who are not keeping track of the score and, you know, cry when they get tagged out. And then dad comes out and talks to the ref and then they change the,
they run the wrong way of the bases.
And you're absolutely right because you think about it. We start with a certain base path length. Mm-hmm. Why? Because the kid that's in the middle age group can effectively make the throw. And I'm going to do baseball because that's what I know best, although I know football pretty well too. But we have this idea of you have this certain distance.
But you do it in moderation, right?
What's that? I said I know them. I said I know them.
Yeah.
I haven't watched a baseball game in 3 years. So, other than the ones I coach.
I was going to say you haven't watched those either.
But
oh my goodness.
That was cold.
Sorry.
Sorry.
Jackie, get your hands off of Jonathan. Yeah. This is an audio recording. Yeah.
Choking. All right, no, so but they know that the average age group in this age can make this throw. So the younger ones are challenged to be able to finally get there. And the older ones start to excel at it, and they start to feel pretty good about it, and they get to a point, and they, boom.
They move them, right?
And they move them up until you hit high school, and then you're up at the 90 feet, and you're the same all the way through the pros, and that's when it gets exciting because the high school students understand, yeah, you're pretty good for where you're at, and the game's moving pretty fast, and we want to make it seem exciting fast, so we give you metal bats. But then we begin to retard the play a little bit by bringing in wood bats into the colleges and into the other levels. And eventually, you know, you get up to the full-blown point of it. But the high school student is enamored that know that he's playing on the same exact dimensions as the national-leveled professional ball player at the show.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's what we don't have in church.
And we want exactly the opposite. That's too difficult. You know, I mean, I've had people actually complain that they can't make the transition from a 15-minute sermon to a 36-minute sermon. It's just impossible. And that their kids will not be able to do it. That's ridiculous. I've had My kids have been listening to 36 to 45 minute, long sermons.
Preachments.
Since they were infants, because we had them in there. You know, we've been telling, and it's what you train them to do. They expect to be able to do what you train them to do. And if you tell them you can't do this, it's too complicated, and it's unreasonable to expect this, of course they're going to come away with that.
I want to, you know, along that line, we were talking about this, me and one of our church members who helps in the children's ministry. The concept of going to the bathroom. Mm-hmm. Middle of a sermon, you cannot hold it. At a ball game, oh, we'll wait till halftime.
Yeah, no, this is too exciting.
Oh, no, we can't go now. It's just, I mean, something all the way down to a natural bodily function, you can prioritize based upon what you, the importance you place upon what it is you're participating in.
All right, around the time of
elementary or middle school age, children deemed physically and mentally ready to begin to adopt the ascetic lifestyle of athletica. Depending upon the particular denominational strain, parents will insist either that children rise well before sunup to practice for several hours in athletica training, or that such practice be dutifully performed immediately after school. Some adherents do both. Late evening hours and weekends are reserved for the equivalent of local and regional worship services, at which athletica adherents gather corporately, following intricate and time-honored liturgies that can often appear as a tangled as a tangle of somewhat arbitrary rules to the uninitiate, but which perceptibly rouse athletica followers to heights of emotional experience. So dedicated, this religion affects food and sleep. In the more devout athletica households, diet and other bodily disciplines are also part of the ascetic training. Certain foods are eaten or avoided in an effort to maximize fitness for advancement in the ranks of athletica, and dietary supplements are supposed to enhance the devotee's mind or body are sometimes procured at great cost. Those most dedicated to this life will carefully regulate their sleep to ensure supreme attunement and awareness in the practice of athletica. Attaining sufficient sleep in the midst of such a demanding schedule can be difficult, but most adherents find that short nights due to athletica events can be compensated for by using times formerly set aside for other religious activities. Example, Sunday mornings, to gain extra hours of sleep.
Okay, well, I think there's two things that has to be addressed. Number one, the sin of gluttony that's rampant in the church. That has to be thrown out there. I mean,
why do you keep on raining on this parade, man? Why can't we just enjoy your article and then be done?
Well, because,
are you suggesting that gluttony is a problem in the church?
Okay, well, if we want to accomplish what she's actually writing about and saying the church, the reason why the church is failing is because it's not as dedicated as people are to athletics, then yeah, gluttony has to be thrown out there because, you know, these people are taking care of their bodies, are doing different things, maybe to an obsessive nature. But the fact of the matter is that there's still a discipline involved. Drawing that same parallel, does our Bible not say gluttony is a sin? And yet, we consistently and constantly fellowship around food.
Golly, yeah. The dessert fellowship is coming up next Tuesday.
Not anymore.
now it's push-up fellowship.
No, Pastor, if more people actually followed your example of spiritual leadership, they would do the necessary things to be physically healthy, exercise, and then they would see you moderate when you do or do not have sweets. And though you may indulge at a certain level, I'm sure there's going to be times then that's going to be in a reducted state because you yourself hold your body in subjection.
Well, no, Sunday he said he ate a whole apple pie.
Over time. I was listening
to
your message.
No. Yeah.
And then I said 2 minutes.
But do you understand?
Yeah, it's over time.
Pastor, you definitely understand what I'm saying here.
Who said something up front when you said over time? They said, what, all today or something?
Some smart remark. Yeah.
But we never, the problem is the church isn't balancing those things. I mean, for instance, when we look at all the celebrity pastors, I mean, you've got to be a moron if you think this guy's spending more time in the study than he is in the gym.
Right.
He's clearly, I mean, there's a, I don't know if I can name names here, but you know,
you can do whatever you want.
You listen to you watch a Steve Furtick video, and you know this guy is not spending the time in the study that he should be. But you know that with the biceps he's got, he's spending a lot of time in the gym because it's all appearance, and it's once again, it's body image, and it's that form of idolatry that's so rank in our society. Why does he do it? Because the people expect him to.
Would that not also stem back to some of the ancient athletic culture?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and this is, it does go back to the Greek, you know, the Hellenistic, body worship and the Roman body worship that we see as well. But that's a problem. We have a church that is very...
Just not the sumo wrestling.
We should try to introduce it. Yeah. The idea that we if we're going to neglect one, the body or the soul, what is the American Christian going to neglect? He's going to neglect the soul every single time. And it's the soul that goes on for eternity. I mean... I realize I'm speaking as somebody who's about 40 pounds over his optimal weight. But I make a deliberate choice some evenings. Okay, I need to finish reading this. I need to finish some sort of something academic as opposed to going out and going for a run. I will make that decision at this point in my life. I'm not going to go. I know I'm shaving years off my life, but I want my people to know that I'm training for the things that last forever, and not for, I can run all I want. I'm still going to put on weight. That's just my family. But I want them to see that the most important thing is that they be fit for heaven, and not just fit for the stadium.
And I'm not talking to that level, mm-hmm. but I am talking about the idea of the stewardship of your own body. Mm-hmm. That it has to exist. Trust me, I'm the guy who's had to drop 70 pounds mm-hmm. to avoid having blood pressure medicine mm-hmm. because I committed the sin of gluttony. And there's no other way around it. That and slothfulness. Because to say that I'm going to sit and read my Bible for an hour and not take 30 minutes and go for some kind of cardio fitness, even if it's just simply walking, for the sake of having a little bit of control, or I'm going to say, you know what, I'm not having seconds. No, I'm not having that for diet. No, I'm not going to mix my carbs and my proteins if I think that's the way to cut things down, and that's what worked for me. It did. You know, those types of things are coming into play here, and I'm drawing back to the soldier days. I'm drawing back to the athletic days, because there was many times I'm out there and saying, you know, you've done this once when you played football. You did this when you played baseball. 46 isn't an excuse now. And it meant that I got up an hour earlier mm-hmm. so that I could balance both the physical health and the spiritual health, because my Bible presents both in balance as being godly. And
I think Andy would argue with you about the imbalance part.
Well,
I
don't mean like 30 minutes for 30 minutes.
Okay, all right.
I meant...
both in moderation.
Holistically to your life.
But I think, I mean, we can get... we have no problem in this town getting young men to wake up at oh dark 30
right.
and then go work out for an hour.
Right.
Because they see the benefits of it. But I can't get somebody to read a Bible for 30 minutes, you know, telling them this is the make or break between your children growing up and you having a godly or a godless perspective on life.
And that's what our author is addressing.
Right. And I think we could tap dance around this all day long, but what we really honestly know is the fact that if I believe, if I get up at O-Dark 30 and go work out in the gym for an hour and an hour and a half, I believe there's going to be some reward. If mm-hmm. I truly believe that there was going to be a reward from reading my Bible, I would do it.
Right.
But what I think the problem could possibly be is because of our sinful fallen nature and our pride that we believe that there's benefits in what these parents are taking to their children. I mean, because, look, you meet these parents, every one of these parents think their kid's going to be the next mm-hmm. big superstar. I mean, they all, it's just unbelievable how, you know...
ridiculous.
You know, disillusioned they are. I mean, that's not the right word.
No, that's an excellent
word,
just,
John. It's just like reality check. You know, you got to run to over here and you think he's going to be in the NBA. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just unbelievable when you talk to some of these, like, over-the-top travel ball people. And I know some of them are athletic and do a good job and maybe have a chance of going to college the next level. But, like, she's going to get into the percentages. It's extremely small. But I think what we don't believe is that there is an eternal reward. I mean, we were really struggling in America to believe that God exists, even when I don't see him physically, and that he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him.
Yeah,
we were really struggling.
Right,
with that.
But I think I would wholeheartedly agree with you. I think you're spot on. And I think that part of it is we've created a culture, a church culture, where apathy is acceptable and ignorance is okay.
And that's what I'm trying to attack here, leveraging this article.
And I also think that what we've done is created a church culture in which everything is so esoterical and out there, pie in the sky, all of that, you know, religion stuff is just thought and I'm going to sit around and contemplate my navel. No, there's a real connection to, did I yell at my wife? Did I forgive her? Did she forgive me? Why? Because it's related to the gospel. Why? Because when I didn't deserve it, the God of the universe who holds my very being together, yes, I believe that. Yes, I believe he came. He died for me when I didn't deserve it, offered me this grace, and then called me and put me in his family. I have no other choice but to forgive her. Mm-hmm. I don't care what she said to me. Mm-hmm. You know? She didn't put me on a cross. I mean, come on. We don't connect what the Bible teaches to us. Mm-hmm. There's a huge disconnection. And we think, like Andy said, because we've gotten so specialized in everything, that's for the theologians to think about. Mm-hmm. You know, well, somebody wants to spend all their days doing that, but I'm going to do sports.
Yeah, but that's because the bulk of our churches, if we go out and we do a Sunday morning survey for the next 52 weeks and all eight of us around this table are going to be in a different church, and we're going to come back and we're going to report the sermon, what the focus was. Was it exegetical? Was it challenging? Was it doctrinally sound? And all those things. Wouldn't we find that the vast majority of them are just utterly nothing? I mean, wouldn't that be fair that probably 95% of them are just unbelievable fluff? But yet the sports game is the sports game. It has rules. It has things to follow. You need to know it, the plays, the uniqueness of it. And everyone is expected to know it and to be passionate about it. But we've allowed Sunday morning worship services across all denominations in America to become nothing but a story.
I bet you if you did this. I bet you if you went to just a man on the street interview and said, who's the NFL quarterback that's taking a knee instead of standing for the national anthem? They could tell you his name, and then you say, would you please quote three lines from the national anthem? And they probably couldn't do it. They probably get as far as, oh, say, can you see?
Yeah. Bunch of bones in the air.
Yeah, because that's not important, John.
One thing that's also very interesting is we want, I mean, why are Americans getting fluffy worship services? Because they want fluffy worship services. What kind of game do they want to see? Do they want to see a fluffy game where, you know, basically...
That's when you go home early.
Yeah, basically, you know, that's nothing... No, they want the hard game. They want the game where the guys are playing, you know, their hearts out.
That's why the crowd boos when someone does pass interference or something, because they realize a rule's been violated.
Right.
No, we can't just let that go. You know, our game is supreme. Something's wrong here. We need to fix it.
And at the same level, that's what we press our kids to do. We want you to be performing to the best of your ability. You know, so...
And yet when we step in church, let's forgive it all.
Well, you know, you go to this, okay? You got the gluttony in the paragraph one, and you got the slothfulness in paragraph two. Okay, so number one, there's church people out there criticizing the people for having these strict diets and everything else when they themselves, all they want to do is fellowship around food. Okay, you need to repent and you need to bring some of that to this. Okay, in the same essence though, athletic people, yeah, you're not slothful Monday through Friday, but you need to practice getting up and continuing a 7-day week practice and make yourself to church. And you need to be here, even if they're, you know.
All right, what do I do though, Jack? And what do I do if the only day my travel team plays ball is Sundays?
Then you don't play travel ball.
Yeah, Jesus said you can't serve two masters.
Yeah, you don't play travel ball.
That was a decision my mom and dad had to make when I was in middle school.
And that goes back to what I've said all along. We need to get it back in the high school, back into the middle school. And we have the best advantage to not have the disconnect of theology so that we are extrapolating. Guys, just like we're training right now to play baseball, we need to be also doing this.
Right, but do you know, Jack, that, for example, I know that in volleyball, we have families in our church that are putting their kids in travel volleyball so that they'll be more successful in Bulldog volleyball.
Yes.
Right.
Well, and I'm very aware of that.
Right, and so they're saying Bulldog volleyball is not enough. Right. Or because my kid isn't as athletic, and because somehow I've got this dream that it's really important that they're super successful on this volleyball court, as though somehow that's going to impact them in any way, shape, or form in their adult life.
It is. Well,
they could get a college scholarship and go to school.
Yeah,
for
and there are two sides of
money.
Yeah,
but it is impacting them in their thing. Unfortunately, the people that you're talking about is impacting them in a way that if they can carry those patterns into their adult life, then they're not going to be the kind of Christians you want in an adult life.
If I can maybe give an answer to what we've been, because I don't want it to seem like I'm against athleticism.
I know you're not.
Bodily exercise does profit a little. I will absolutely. I think the model that we need to actually try to recover, if we ever had it, is the Eric Little model. Here we have one of the nation's greatest sportsmen at the time, a man who won Olympic gold. His story is profiled in Chariots of Fire.
Right.
It's an incredibly inspiring movie. And they're producing a sequel, I'm told, about his time in China. Now, this was a man who loved sports and was very good at them. He'd been given a body by God that was better than the average one. And, you know, he said, you know, when I run, I feel his pleasure. You know, that... God made him for that. He knew that. But he also knew that God had made him for himself, to glorify him and to enjoy him forever. And so, for instance, when push came to shove at the Olympics and he was told he had to run on a Sunday, he chose God. I want kids who can go out there and win Olympic gold, but who aren't going to do it if it means dishonoring the Lord, so that they've got that priority there. And I think we've lost that sense of the priority of service to God that we're not.
So I want to ask a question though. Just in the devil's advocate, and we're bouncing this thing around.
Okay,
because I think what I'm not promoting athleticism over anything else. I'm not promoting athletics over other areas of life. What I want us to be fair here is okay. If we're going to say with athletics, it's this way or this way, and if you play on a Sunday, you're sinning. Then we also have to start looking at all of our practices and saying, okay, are we going to put the church, as important as we say it is, into practice in an everyday pragmatic fashion? Okay, so if I think that it's wrong for students to be out there playing on travel teams on Sundays and not at church, and I do.
Okay.
And this is a battle I have in my own home, and listeners, y'all can just understand the farmer household has been dealing with this for many, many years. Because I'm one who has a difference of opinion from the others in my home. I believe I'm just as sinful when I go to a restaurant Sunday afternoon, right after church. Because it would not be open if I did... Theoretically, it would not be open if we did not go to it.
Mm-hmm.
And by me going to it, I could be preventing a Christian whose livelihood is tied to that from being in church because they themselves have to come in early to prepare that food. I'm going to rush out of my church service to go eat.
Would it not then spin back around to the decision we just had where they choose not to work on Sundays? I mean, for the most part, people do choose the employment that they have.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not impossible to find a restaurant that will work with your schedule.
Yes, but why would I lay a stumbling block before my brother or sister?
Well, who here is over... I have a question to figure out something that you're talking about. Who here is over 40 like me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you remember Blue Laws.
Yes.
You and I remember you couldn't go to a restaurant on Sunday.
Right.
Now, why was that? Well, that was because Baptists, Congregationalists, and Presbyterians, you know, the three actually, those were the three main religions, along with the Episcopalians, that built the country. Or at the time, I'm not saying that we shouldn't have, you know, Pentecostals, and well, that's an entirely different discussion. Let's stay away from that. But the fact was they influenced the laws. Baptists didn't go out to lunch after service in the 19th century. You know, 100 years. It wasn't really until the mid 20th century that this idea of, you know, brunch after service became the norm. And I would say that part of that was because we started doing sports on Sunday. 1930s, we started playing football on Sunday. But there was a gradual denigration, and I would say spiritually, of the entire idea of the Lord's Day.
So what the listener can take away from this is that family goes out to dinner on Sunday after church, and that family's gone all weekend travel ball, so they're both gone, so it's about the same.
No, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, would we say it's a sin if a kid could play travel ball at 2 o'clock on Sunday afternoon and be back in service that evening?
Look, I think it's, this is just me, okay? I think it's all about the priorities that the family is communicating to the child.
Yeah, I think that's what this article is basically about. Because, right. I mean, she's gone out of her way to make this thing very exaggerated, using words like vestments and just all that kind of very religious language, liturgy and stuff like this. And it's the connection is very clear that what she's saying is we're talking about the folks that are making the choice to worship this idol rather than be in church. We're not talking about someone who goes out to lunch after you have a church service or whether we should meet every day. She's addressing one thing, and that is our sports-crazed society that we live in. I mean, we would have to really be denying what's going on if we disagreed with her that this is a problem in America.
Incidentally, I should back up. I wasn't being fair. Episcopalians and Roman Catholics also observed the Sabbath, or the Sunday Sabbath in history. It wasn't just those three. It's just most of the people listening are going to be from that kind of background. But it's priorities that we've...
Just the family that we're talking about, Family X, last 7 days. How many conversations about baseball? How many conversations about the Bible?
Right.
Just ask that some... Just father-son conversations, the last 7 days.
Over here.
Exactly. Just how many times did you and your son talk about baseball this week? How many times did you and your son talk about anything spiritual? I mean, anything. Was there any spiritual conversations? Did the Word of God come up one time? Did you pray with your son one single time this week other than food? Did you have any legitimate conversations about anything of substance outside of baseball last 7 days? Those are metrics that are legitimate in my mind. We can all come across with arbitrary rules. It's sin to go out to dinner or not. It's sin to play baseball or not on this time. But that there's no end to that. Mm-hmm. Right? But just look at your own family.
Right.
If every time your son hears from you, Dad, it revolves around baseball, you're communicating baseball is the single most important thing in our lives. That's what you're communicating.
And I think it also tells us that if we are men of limited resources and time, which we are, and we're concerned with changing hearts and minds, which we are, then the people that we need to be talking to is the father of a son or a daughter who is just about that age when they're going to really start to get into their sports. And if we were really going to be stalwart, if we saw this beginning to develop from someone in our church, we would need to have the intestinal fortitude to pull that man aside and say, I want you to consider the fact that you're walking very close to idolatry in the way that you communicate.
And that's why we're having this podcast right now, John.
Yep.
Because we're hoping that there's one person out there, just one single individual out there, that would say, there's a possibility that I've crossed a line that I shouldn't cross. You know, Jack, if this family, as they're traveling to wherever they're traveling, is following along the service on the live webcast, and after it's over with, they have a 30-minute conversation about the sermon. Then they get out and play baseball. Then they get back in the van and get back in time for evening worship service. And I don't even care if they come stumbling in their T-shirt and their shorts.
Volleyball shorts, though.
You're right. Not the volleyball shorts. That's a separate conversation. But the point of the matter is, What you're showing, Johnny, is this is important.
Yeah.
This is important. And they're not showing that. They're not showing this is important.
And that's what I'm saying all along. The choices that we make, we're making based upon the idea, is this important or is this not? I bring up the restaurant because it's a conversation we've had in our home where I think that a day of rest is so important, and the idea of saying that our society is too much into greed and everything else, mm-hmm. that should we as a family forego going to lunch per chance that a Christian is working there, per chance that
right.
I'm contributing
and
to
and I
that.
Take the other perspective, which could be totally wrong, and I may have to account for that. Praise God, there's no condemnation than then there are
right.
in Christ Jesus.
And I could right. be I could be overzealous.
But I'll go out. I want to make sure we have an amazing testimony. I'm going to give that woman the best tip she's had all Sunday afternoon. I'm going to talk to her about what we're going to pray right now. Is there anything that we can pray for you about? Right. We go to the same restaurants on a regular basis. People know who we are. It creates more exposure in the community. So again, it's a deliberate thing. It's not just going through life. We do things with an intentionality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that, you know, I celebrate the sovereignty of God on Sundays because the woman that God sovereignly put with me isn't going to cook on Sunday, and she told me so. So we go out.
Well, as a man wiping the dish, brother. But my point in all of it is, and still I'm going back to this idea, is I didn't read this as a satirical thing. When I saw that she was an advocate of classical education, which does not have anything to do with sports, it took on the scent of propaganda, demonization of athletics, as in, hey, this is why churches are failing, because they're doing it better in this realm. So I began to separate that part out and say, okay, where are they doing it better? How are they doing it better? And I began examining days ago when you gave us this article, the concepts and the ideas of, okay, but athletics gives us this discipline. What would that look like in church if we brought it over?
Okay, so I'll give you an example of what that would look like.
I
remember a single soldier telling me for the first time that I'd never been told in a Sunday morning worship service before that I should be ashamed of myself if I don't know a particular Bible verse. That I'd never heard that. I'd been in church my entire life, and I had never heard the idea that the preacher told me that if you don't know this Bible verse, you should be ashamed of yourself. And he said, man, I didn't know that Bible verse. And I decided there was something to the idea that I've been a Christian all my life and didn't know a Bible verse. And so I came back the next service because I wanted to be challenged again. Well, that's what I'm talking about, Jack. Mm-hmm. If you don't know how to do a particular play in soccer or what offsides is or whatever, you're an idiot. Learn it. There's an expectation. Mm-hmm. In church, it's okay just to be stupid.
Okay.
It's okay just to be ignorant.
Right.
And we have to turn that culture. We have to say, no, it's not okay to not be able to defend your faith. It's not okay to not understand the doctrines of grace. It's not okay to not be able to share the gospel. That there is an expectation that you embrace this thing called religion the same way you embrace football.
And Pastor, Romans 14 says, okay, one guy esteems one day above another day, one guy esteems them the same. One guy likes to eat meat, one guy doesn't eat meat, but then it says, let each do according to faith, because whatever's not done in faith is sin. So we go back to the restaurant idea. The restaurant idea that I'm drawing the parallel is that both of us didn't just criticize the idea of a discipline or the idea of an approach, the idea of making decisions. We each looked at faith and said, okay, how can I glorify God best in this scenario? And for you, that means that you're going out and leveraging that opportunity as a gospel-enhancing, kingdom-advancing opportunity. And I'm sitting here going, okay, maybe I'm looking at the stumbling block side of it. It doesn't mean that either one of us are in sin. Where sin comes in is when you cease doing it as a gospel enhancer because of some arbitrary pressure.
And you violate your conscience.
And I violate my conscience by going out. So we're constantly in this realm. Both of us are still exercising disciplines that could have been learned, not just in athletics, in fine arts or any other area, from our parents and the idea of work ethics, the idea of all these things. So what I'm wanting everybody to understand is, yes, I agree with everything she's saying in here, but I feel like because of her bias, she chose one area, and yes, it's a very visible area, and it's a great hot topic time, kneeling and everything else.
So we should ask Heather to write the next one on Entertainica.
Yeah. Why not?
Musica.
Movia.
But you know, two things I've heard so far that I think can really help. And the first one is the idea of reward. People go to those, like someone said, I'm not getting the benefit that I want out of BBA volleyball. Let me go to travel volleyball.
Yes.
Why is that? Well, because BBA volleyball isn't tough enough. It's we're not learning the fundamentals enough. We're not winning enough. We're not, the strict regimen is not, the bar isn't set high enough.
The competition's not strong enough.
Right. That's the whole reason for doing that. So, first of all, people want to strive for something that's hard and achieve and get the reward. Second of all, they want accountability. You know, that whole piece. Oh, sorry, you didn't come to this practice. You're not playing the next game. Mm-hmm. You know, that motivates them. So then, here's the question. Why did we take that out of church if that's really the way people operate? Why did we do that in our past 50, 60 years? What was the biggest influence to make pastors think that people don't want accountability?
All right. I'll answer that, and then we got to wrap this podcast up because it must be 2:30 or so. Does anybody have the time check?
2:10.
2:10. All right. So we as an entity, as a big entity, I'm not talking about little individual congregations, decided that we needed to try this seeker-sensitive movement, and we went that direction. And the good news is that many churches found that was not right. It wasn't successful. And we do have churches turning the corner on exactly what you're talking about. The entire nine marks thing by Mark Dever is the idea that there are people still looking for accountability. There are people that want to be part of a membership. There are people that have expectations. And what we found is that those giant congregations, like the one up at Willow Creek.
Yeah.
I mean, they repudiated most recently, last couple of years, everything that they did, recognizing it didn't do what we wanted it to do. We can be introspective in our own independent fundamental Baptist church movement. Where are the souls we saved? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Where are all the kids that we baptized in bus routes? Where are they? They're not disciples of Christ right now. They're not turning the world upside down. We created a bunch of people with a false assurance of salvation that have no reasonable expectation whatsoever that they're going to be in heaven. They're going to bust hell wide open, having prayed a prayer to ask Jesus
and
in the
heart. I think, and dare I agree with Andy? Oh no!
Oops.
One of the key words was the Arminianist piece that was so prevalent in the 30s and 40s that
yes.
had a whole bunch of revivalist movement. Maybe even going back a little before that with Billy Sunday and
decisional
all of that.
Decisional regeneration.
And the reason for two reasons. Number one, they couldn't stand a mean God who was wrathful. Right. And they couldn't stand the idea that humans weren't a big part of this situation of salvation.
Sure. We weren't the heroes of the story.
So we can't be egocentric, and we got a mean God, so let's change our approach.
Well, we took sin out of the equation.
Mm-hmm. That's the issue.
Yep.
I don't know if you, in my circles, all I hear these days is about brokenness. I never hear sin any longer. You know, the idea that... What's the problem? Well, the problem is that I'm a sinner on my way to hell, and that I need salvation.
Yeah, and we don't need to be healed.
To deserve it.
No, look at the title of that article.
From the dead.
The sin. That would never fly in most churches.
Right.
So yeah. I'm glad that you haven't lost that.
Pastor, I know you said we got to wrap it up, and we're not going to get to the rest of this. If you're going to post a link,
mm-hmm.
So what's going to happen is from this point forward, basically what it says is okay, look. These people, they eat and they sleep regimented lives. Okay, so number one, principle number one, if we want to regain some of this into the church, it's going to take discipline. Number two, the next thing they talk about is how they promote these heroes of the sports.
Mm-hmm.
The heroes, the Hall of Fame guys, you know, the miraculous catch, you know, all of those different things. From the Steeler fans out there, for
right. the William Tyndalls, the John
yes,
Calvins, the
that's
John
exactly
Knoxes,
what,
the
like,
Jonathan
like we,
Edwards,
like we
the
special,
David Brainerds.
Yes, right. But not just them. We need to go back to the martyrs.
William Tyndale was strangled to death with a chain,
but,
and then they burnt his body, and then to make sure that he couldn't be resurrected, they put gunpowder underneath it so that it blew his bones as far apart, because their idea was, if we scatter him that far, he can't be resurrected. Now, just imagine the vitriol that it takes to damage a body like
and
that.
And how they didn't understand the God that he was talking about.
But the idea of that is that we've lost that. We don't have this idea of
heroes.
These heroes of the faith. Okay, the next thing is these ideas of memorization of statistics. It's going to take us, once again, memorizing God's Word, and that has to have a promoted value to it. Like you said, the guy who was, I can't believe I should be ashamed of myself for not knowing that verse. That can't be said enough. The next thing that goes on here is the idea of the colors, the symbols, the numbers, and the things that have meaning. We've got to talk about what holds special meaning in our religion. We got to talk about, hey, they didn't die because they had a faith. They died because they wanted to put the printed word into the hands of the common man.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And so our Bible has a meaning, and it's not just an arbitrary thing.
If I can get to the dressing thing. Obviously, all of us are against vestments, liturgical vestments.
Right.
I hope we are.
Which was next.
I wear a suit every week.
But here's the thing. How do we in our culture show that something's special? We dress differently for it. How do we dress these days for church? We look like we just rolled out of bed. You know, honestly, I get people coming to funerals these days dressed like, they picked up stuff off the floor. And
the main regards they have.
Yeah,
That's the undisciplined lives that our people are living.
But we just don't have this idea that when we move into corporate worship, we're meeting with the God of the universe. You know, this is...
But we're not. We're meeting with our co-pilot. See, that's the influence of the Arminian theology.
I thought we were meeting with our homeboy.
Right, or our homeboy. Exactly. And in either case, that's the influence of the Arminian. God is not high and lifted up. He's our buddy.
Yeah.
He's what is it? The saying was, he's gone from being the Almighty to the Old Matey. You know, the
Old Matey.
Jonathan said he's coming for his best life now.
That's why I have to look for my best life now.
Yeah. So there's something to the whole dressing thing.
Yeah, there is. And then it closes out with this idea of it is back to the idea of this takes devotion, this takes discipline, and it's for 2% in athletics to reach the highest level. Hey, Christians, it takes devotion. It takes a willingness to transfer what we've believed, what we held dear, all the heroes of our faith, all of our scripture, to the next generation. And it's not for 2%, it's for 100%.
In the Christian world.
In the Christian world.
Mm-hmm. Right. And her number, 2%, is too high.
It depends. Maybe across all sports.
Right. I asked David McManus, and I don't know if he ever listens anymore, but I asked him about baseball, and I asked him in particular about a particular student and the probability that they'll play Division I ball and the probability they get the NBA. And he sent me a link in which all the statistical data
it's
had been
1%.
Done. Yeah. Yeah, and in soccer, it's less than 1%. In soccer, it's less than
1%. But I think this number would incorporate NBA and football. Probably football would be the big swinger.
Well, there's a bigger pull in soccer because it's worldwide.
Right.
Yeah. But I think one of the things, if I can close with this thought, that you started off by talking about the lack of men and masculinity within the church. And one of the biggest problems we have is lack of church in men. Wouldn't it be wonderful...
Yes.
If when there's a group of 8 guys talking, and the kid walks up to find out what they're talking about, it's not politics or sports. Mm-hmm. They're talking about the Book of Jonah, or they're talking about perseverance, or they're actually getting into a rip-roaring argument about whether, you know, predestination is single or double, or something, you know, like that. And, you know, they see by the animation of these guys, this is important, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, so, you know, Andy, what you bring out is a good point. So in 1995, when I came back, late 95, no, it was 96, when I came back from Bosnia,
mm-hmm.
I had told my wife, I'll start going to church with you, and I started going to church. And I would go to church, and that scenario you're talking about right now happened. Everybody was standing around talking. They weren't talking about the military. They weren't talking about advancing their careers, and they weren't talking about football. They were talking about God, and I had nothing to talk about. I had absolutely nothing to talk about, and it drove me crazy. I didn't want to go back to church, mm-hmm. but I promised my wife, so I kept going. And one guy, Bert Bunner, former Berean, mm-hmm. was over in Germany, pastoring now elsewhere. He said, okay, he said, look, you're a football fan. I like the Dallas Cowboys too. So he would have maybe a 3 or 4 minute conversation with me about it, but it always closed out with, and what have you learned from God's Word this week? In other words, he like your restaurant, he leveraged just a little bit to get my interest in and draw me in and befriend me, but it was this constant challenge, and I realized, okay, I'm only getting 3 or 4 minutes of knowledgeable conversation here, and if I'm going to talk about something else, I'm going to have to start reading the Bible, I'm going to have to start, and look where I am today.
Mm-hmm. Amen, by the grace of God.
You get what I'm saying? So that's the concept, and that's why I'm so adamant about this idea of it is that we can't completely demonize it. We got to take the positives, and we got to put God behind it and leverage that.
All right, well, Andy, thanks for coming and hanging out with a bunch of Baptists and to talk about the degree to which athletics has become idolatry in America and unfortunately in the church. And we pray that you would be introspective in your listening of this and ask yourself, like we do, is there idolatry in our lives?
Yes.
I think it was Jonathan Edwards said that our heart is nothing but an idol factory. And so we all have to be on guard for idolatry, whether it's sports or whatever it is.
Yep.
Thanks for listening. Have a great day.